Welcome to The Upshot, Hulte World Disc Golf's podcast about the latest in the disc golf world. It is Tuesday, May 23rd. I'm Charlie Eisenhood, joined by Josh Mansfield. Beaver State Fling, taking place this past weekend on the Disc Golf Pro Tour. It was a silver event up in Estacada, Oregon. I'm from New Mexico. Generally, when I see a Spanish language name, I'm going to pronounce it in the Spanish way because, and to be honest, it's not always the case in New Mexico either. Like the Rio Grande River, some people say that. It sounds a little contrived if you're like the Rio Grande. But anyway, I always mess up Estacada every year, and it just shows my ignorance of the Pacific Northwest. But apologies to our Oregon fans. Josh, Beaver State Fling. Absolutely beautiful as always. And how about Jen Allen, after decades at the highest level of the game, coming close so many times, finally getting a tour win and having to beat out Holland Hanley, who was playing on fire herself.
Mm-hmm. You could tell how much this meant for Jen, and I think it was a really exciting opportunity and a great weekend from her. And she did it with such swagger. I mean, to come out with starting out the day with the lead, hitting an ace and then three more birdies in a row, just you knew that we were in for something that was going to be an incredible round from Jen Allen. She does end up tying the hot round with Holland Hanley at the eight down, which is more than enough for her to keep the two-stroke lead. Holland missing and chaining out the putt on 18, that would have put her to 22 and a 9-under. But all in all, Jen Allen just able to close it out. Never really any question on 18. She played it perfectly, able to take down that birdie and the win. It's something for Jen Allen that I think is really important when, even though it's a silver event, it's one that I think has a lot of prestige around it. We talked about that moving up into the show. So of all the silver events to win, I think this is a really good one for Jennifer Allen. It's one that, I don't know, it's not the one I would have thought she would win. Like if going into this year,
the same thing.
This isn't the course that I would pick for Jen Allen to win on. But it was a really remarkable weekend of golf. And Jen Allen's been in the mix a couple times this year, and she
really has
still got it.
She definitely still got it. I mean, holding it down with Owen Scoggins up in the, the Masters age players who can still just, and very obviously very different stylistically, those two players. Here's what I think, what a dream to come into the final round with a lead and then open up going 5-under through four holes when you ace hole one, get on SportsCenter and just absolutely able to take that momentum through to the rest of the round. So awesome. And interesting fact, Josh, this is her first time ever averaging over 1,000 at a tour event. For an entire weekend, which I suppose that makes sense because she's never won. Normally, if you do that, you win. The only time she's ever had a tournament in her entire career where she's averaged over 1,000 was at a one-round C-tier. So this really is like some of her best ever disc golf. Here's what I think is amazing about that. Not just that she played well. Mm-hmm. It's that she played that well and shot that well while putting 0% from circle two and 70% from circle one. That is crazy. I would bet that's never happened before. And I have no way of like evaluating that. I don't think anybody could possibly evaluate it, but I doubt it's ever been done in FPO to go three rounds against elite players, shoot over 1,000, and not make a single circle two putt. I bet it's never happened. But that's just literally how insanely good she was from tee to green.
it's really surprising because there have been cases of like the Memorial or the Shelly Sharp Invitational down in Arizona where neither have been tour events that Jennifer Allen has won. It's amazing to me that she hasn't shot over 1,000 rated at those kind of tournaments over on the weekend. She's typically just dominating on courses like that when her distance is just outpacing all of the competitors. And so I think it just highlights how good her game was this weekend, that this weekend was the best golf she has ever played at an event ever. That's, you know, based on rating. And like you said, it wasn't even with the strong putting. It was just with exceptional tee to green. If you look at the player stats, her and Holland Hanley just blew the field out of the water. Jen Allen, 26.35 strokes gained tee to green. Holland Hanley, 21.34. Maria Oliva, 13.09.
26 strokes gained in three rounds. That is
three rounds.
Truly amazing. It's truly amazing. And it's worth noting, like, it's not like Jen Allen putted badly. She actually putted pretty well. She made like all her 20 footers, and you know, she needed those. It's just, and you know, there were a lot of players were not making the big putts, and that's kind of the course. Like, there's just not that many opportunities where like you're in a good position to putt, but you're outside of the circle. That's just sort of like a rare situation at Beaver State, because they have like tighter greens and like corners that you have to get around. So, you know, I think Jen Allen ended up being well inside the top half in sort of strokes gained putting. But just a very unusual thing to see 70-0 and that be the winner. So pretty awesome stuff. And look, you know, I know it's a silver event, but given the field, it's still a really, really good win. I mean, it's, I know, you know, no Paige and no Kristen, but I don't feel like that necessarily like takes the shine off of a win for a player like Jen Allen, who has just, you know, been grinding so long. This is like a career achievement unlocked kind of situation.
Yeah, without a doubt. And like you said, I think the fact that it's a silver event does not detract from the fact that Jen Allen now gets to have a first at a Disc Golf Pro Tour event. She's been playing a long time, and it's amazing to me that she hasn't won a national tour, and you know, she still hasn't won an elite series event, but this is, I think, at least an important step in Jen Allen and her career. And I think an important recognition of those Masters players, as you mentioned earlier, Charlie, between Owen and Jen Allen, there are some really excellent Masters age players on the FPO side. And I think I really think one of them can take down an Elite Series win.
Well, I don't see why not. I mean, you look at Jen Allen. I mean, she's got 15-ish podium finishes on tour.
Mm-hmm.
And she's had a lot of second place finishes over the years. And I think that this weekend shows you that, you know, like, here's the question. If Kristen is here, does she beat Jen Allen? I don't think it's a, I certainly don't think it's a lock. Obviously there would be a higher level of competition, but like, Jen played really well. I think she could have, she could have won this tournament with this being, you know, if this was a 3-round world championships and you only played this Milo gold, maybe she wins for real.
Yeah.
Pretty awesome. Meanwhile, on the MPO side, Eagle McMahon gets his first ever silver win at his first ever silver event. Pretty crazy. So he, Josh, he missed cash last week at OTB. And then he comes out here and is the Eagle that we know. Totally unstoppable. Has everything working. Throwing like crazy sky annies and crazy hyzers and just looking like he has the guy that we know that he can be. It's kind of hard to pinpoint exactly, you know, what's going on week to week with Eagle sometimes, but I don't think there's any question that he's still like the number one ceiling guy on tour. Like if he plays his absolute best, I don't think anybody can beat him. there's nobody that has the full set of skills that he has when he's playing his A plus game.
I mean, that's, I think European Open proved that last year.
Yeah, right.
Like, right. Paul did. Paul
gave his best possible effort. It wasn't enough.
And I think that's absolutely, I think that's right on point. Right now, I think Eagle is just the has a level of talent and completeness of game that outshines everybody on tour. It's like if you played that game where, you know, you stole different parts of everybody's game and you're like, oh, I want, you know, Calvin Heimberg's low ceiling shots, and I want you want Aaron Gossage's forehand, and you combine all those things, and of course stylistically it's a little different, but Eagle's got it all. He's got the complete package. Like, you could just put Eagle McMahon for all of those things, and except for maybe like nerve, in, you know, because like you said, week to week Eagle can be a little up and down, and sometimes it feels like he's just completely out of it, and sometimes he's just locked. That's the only thing that I ever see that really feels deficient, and it's good to see that he's throwing well and that it doesn't seem like injury is hampering him at all, and so it's great to see. He's now moved up to fifth place in the Disc Golf Pro Tour standings, jumped James Proctor by one place. And you're right about missing cash at OTB Open, but I think if you just take a snapshot since Champions Cup, tied second Champions Cup, tied second Jonesboro,
yeah,
disastrous right. OTB Open, and then a win at Beaver State.
But that's the thing. It's like, whatever, like, you have a bad tournament. It doesn't really matter as long as you can bounce back. And this is about as good a bounce back as you can ask for. I mean, he never goes OB, one of just six players at the tournament not to go out of bounds. He doesn't take a single bogey. He's in circle two in regulation 80% of the time. 94% C1X putting. Like, dude was just on absolute fire this weekend. And it's funny to like watch his post-round interview because, you know, a lot of times when we see him win Elite Series events, he's like totally overcome with emotion and like he's calling his dad and it's like this whole thing. And, you know, he was like a little bit more relaxed about the whole situation. Maybe that's because it's a silver. Maybe that's because he's getting older. But he talked about how it's been, you know, he's been a little frustrated because he's felt like he's had a chance to win a few times this year and hasn't been able to close it out. And here he is, you know, closing it out against Calvin Heimberg, who was playing great.
Yeah. Yeah, he was. The other thing, you know, and I wanted to highlight that poster on interview as well. He talks about how that Milo is just such a special place to him. And it's one that he grew up watching and just loves playing disc golf there. And so I think the biggest thing about Eagle is when Eagle is having fun playing disc golf is when he really feels at his best. And that's probably a statement that's true of a lot of people. But Eagle especially, I think, is one you can see he'll go from just looking like he hates the game to and then playing terribly and then flipping around. And I know that like when you're playing well, you're enjoying it. But for Eagle, it feels like when he enjoys where he's at, when he's in the right mind space coming into the tournament, like that's when you just know, like, it's like, oh, okay, here comes Eagle, right? Eagle's going to have a good weekend. And it feels a little bit more predictive than it might for some other players. That makes sense for then Beaver State Fling, and why I think he's going to be a real contender to win at Portland again, where he's won in the past.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You got, I mean, you got to put him up there with Calvin and Gannon as most likely to win that tournament. Right.
I think so.
And I don't know how you want to rank those players, but somebody that probably won't be in that conversation, but that we absolutely have to talk about, Carter Ahrens ends up finishing tied for fifth. And if you've never heard his name, I wouldn't blame you. He's 15 years old, Josh. And he comes out here and he shoots a 12 under with no bogeys. And he had a stretch. I mean, basically, the first 14 holes, he got 12 birdies. He's hitting 60-foot putts and he's parking half the holes, and this kid is going to be something special. And I know it gets a little tired like saying that over and over again, but he set the record last year for the youngest player ever to reach a 10-10 rating. He was 15 years old and 4 months. 15. 10-10 rated. And here he comes. Like, this is like Cannon Burr, right? It's like, okay, mm-hmm. This kid looks like he's going to be something special. We're seeing it now. Like, these players who are coming up as extremely talented juniors at the age of 8-9 years old, who have been playing a decade by the time they get to the point where they can really compete at the top level because they have the physical ability to do that. Well, I mean, the next generation of disc golfers is going to just demolish what we've known as professional elite level disc golf from the past.
Yep. Yeah, it definitely is. And that highlights to me, right, the fact that he can shoot a 12 under. I'm curious. Let me pull the round rating real fast on that round.
He shot a 55. I mean,
10-70
in his final round. That's crazy.
Yeah. 15-year-old shot 10-70 final round.
It makes me wonder what's the record for a 10-70 plus rated round by age. There right. can't be that many 15-year-olds who have ever done it. Maybe it's never happened before.
but what's crazy to me, what that highlights is that this 15-year-old has all the skills necessary already, physical skills at least, to win an elite series. If you shot three, let me clarify, right? Like,
Josh,
I'm not saying he's going to win an elite series, right? I think that there's a lot of golf, like golf skills in terms of how to play a course, how to recover from bad breaks, how to play when you have a lead, how to play from behind. There are lots of skills, and the mental game especially, that I think that are necessary in order to maintain the consistency in order to achieve that level of golf for multiple rounds. But if he had shot it, but he shot the 10-70, right? So we know he's capable of it just from the fact his driving, up shots and putting, he's capable of shooting a 10-70.
Sure.
If he had shot a 10-70 all weekend, he could win just about any elite series event.
Yeah, but of course, but if I shot 10-70 every single round, I could also win an event. I mean, sure, but Charlie, it's not easy to do that.
You and I are never going to shoot a 10-70 round. I understand that. That's my point.
I understand that.
My point is, once you've done it once, like, don't get me wrong, it would be much easier, I don't think he is in the place he can do it three times in a row. But the fact that he shows us, hi, this is what I can achieve right now, this is what my ceiling is, means that it'll take time for him to grow into that and to continue to push it up. But he's already got the tools necessary. He's got the talent.
And he looks like he's built like a linebacker. I mean, he is very impressive from a just like raw prospect standpoint. It's crazy. I mean, I don't want to get overhyped about like one round or one performance, but the thing is, I mean, in 2023, he has averaged over 1,000 rated at all of his tournaments except one where he was 992. Now, 1,000 rated isn't what it used to be. It's sure. not enough to be a touring pro, but he's 15. So, it's very impressive. He actually played USDGC last year. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
He finished 80th. No, he did not do well.
No, not well. Okay.
Welcome to the big leagues, kid. But hey, I know it's a silver, but he's now cashed at 2 silver events this year. I just think this is one of those ones. You got to put a pin in that name because this is exactly what it was like when Gannon was starting to come up, and now Gannon wins as much as anybody on tour. And he just graduated high school.
I think 2 to 3 years is probably when you'll expect to see Carter Aarons regularly.
Very possible, right? I mean,
but very possible.
The thing is, Josh, Carter Aarons might not even be the best story out of the golf world this weekend for like a no-name player making it big. Shout out to Michael Block, the 46-year-old professional golf teacher who works at a country club in California and got into the PGGA Championship, where he proceeded to finish 15th, win over $200,000, and become like a national name after he hit an ace that's been number one on SportsCenter for over 24 hours.
This is just the most incredible story. I mean, he makes a ton of money from it. He gets to play with Rory and hits the ace on that card. And then by finishing in the top 15 and, you know, tying for 15th, he is now gets to come back to the PGA Championships next year as well. Insane. And he finishes, he goes ace, bogey, par, par to keep him tied for 15th to qualify for next year. It's just an incredible story. It's so good.
And it's a great reminder of why it's important to have some ways for people who are not the top standard touring professionals to be able to get into big tournaments. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, maybe not the Master, but even like the Masters, right? There's a mechanism for that. And similarly, you know, USDGC has some ways to get in that are like a little atypical. You know, you win the amateur championships or whatever. We need to maintain those things because these kinds of stories are super fun, and I just you gotta love it. I mean, what an incredible thing! What was the stat? His winnings were how much he would make from 1,922 lessons. He charges $150 an hour for golf lessons, which, you know, to be fair, is not bad money.
Right. Right. Oh, that's pretty good. Apparently, though, his most lucrative payout prior was at the Club Professional National Championship 8 years ago, where he made $75,000. So I mean, he's obviously a great stranger golfer. To this. Yeah.
Yeah. He's a great
good golfer.
I think he qualified for the PGA Championship by winning some sort of club professional,
I'm sure,
system that, like, you know, the top X players in the club pro circuit get to play in the PGA Championship. Wow. Amazing. Someday we'll have similar kinds of things happening in disc golf. The payout this weekend was a topic on social media after Drew Gibson had, well, I don't necessarily want to say some thoughts, but he was trying to provoke a response. Classic Drew. We're going to talk about it next.
At Pound, the quality of our gear runs deeper than the stitching. That's why we make everything right here in the U.S., employing highly skilled, well-paid professionals. From bomb-proof Cordura fabric to YKK zippers and recycled plastics, we source the highest quality U.S. materials to make the most comfortable, durable pack in disc golf. Our lifetime warranty stays with the pack, not the purchaser. So regardless of how you find us, we will be here to make sure your pack stays on the course and out of the landfill. Pound's integrity is held together with more than just thread.
Welcome back to The Upshot. Thanks for everybody who wrote in following our preview show for the Beaver State Fling last week and letting us know just how terrible it was. I think we can all acknowledge, all being me and Josh,
yep,
that trying to do 18-hole previews on a podcast isn't a good idea.
Nope. That idea was short-lived and it's going away. So don't worry. That's not happening again.
We swung and we missed. You can't win them all. And it was a cooler idea in concept than it was in practice. But we are going to get a chance to talk a little bit about the course in a second when we do our whole 18 reviews. But first, Drew Gibson tweeted after the Beaver State Fling this tweet. He said, Beaver State Fling factual stats. 2013. By the way, aren't all stats factual? Just anyway, 2013 first place winner, $3,600 payout for the Beaver State Fling with 79 players. That's 10 years ago, of course. 2023 first place winner at the Beaver State Fling, $3,000 with 112 players. That's a $600 loss with 33 more players 10 years later, not counting inflation. Don't be mad at me. I'm just here to provide facts. Look it up. All this is findable. I will note that Drew actually tweeted a version of this tweet earlier that said all the same things, but actually was not factual, and he had to delete it. But this one is, in fact, true. Josh, what do you make of Drew's tweet? Not necessarily what he's trying to say, but like, do you feel like it's a problem that we're seeing this tournament have its payout reduced 10 years later?
What was highlighted by, I believe, a couple other people on Twitter, was that at that time, the Beaver State Fling was an elite series. It was on the national tour at that time. And then, you know, stayed on the elite series until, and in addition, hosting Worlds, right, instead at that in Portland. And then, well, not Portland, but in that in area and playing at that course in 2014. And then now it is on the silver event. I don't know. Like it's a fair question. I'm curious to know how. I mean, I guess I could pull it. But it really when you look at the difference in delineation between an elite series and a silver event, the advertising opportunities, the organizational support between the Pro Tour, the PDGA, it's just very different when the event is an elite series event. And so to me, that's what makes up the largest discrepancy. But I'm not too sure about the difference there and it being a little bit less.
Well, here's what I think is interesting. So we might as well just do the purse watch since we're already talking about this. The total payout this weekend was $43,661. That was a $3,000 MPO winner payout, $2,500 FPO winner payout. Last year's purse at the Beaver State Fling was $34,335. So it's up 27% from a year ago. It is the lowest payout of the season on the Disc Golf Pro Tour, but it's not way out of line with the other silver events that we've had. Texas States was 46.5, Blue Ridge was 51. So it's about $3,000 less than Texas States, but certainly within the same range. I guess the question that I have, Josh,
yeah,
why is it that a tournament like Beaver State Fling, which has all this history and prestige, but it's a silver, has such a lower payout than an elite series event on the Disc Golf Pro Tour? And I'm not singling out Beaver State Fling. This has been true for years. The silver events pay out half, sometimes less than half, of the typical elite series event. And what I'm trying to understand is why that is. It's not like Beaver State had no spectators. There are a lot of people out there this weekend. It's not like Beaver State didn't have top pros. It was packed with top pros. I mean, yeah, there were a few people not playing, but if you're a fan and you wanted to go out and watch, like, you're not getting short shrift by going to this because it's a silver. Mm-hmm. So I don't understand why, like, where's the money coming from? You know, like, somebody is making up the difference for these Elite Series events. Is it the Pro Tour putting the money into the pot? Are manufacturers willing to pay more in sponsorship money to an event that's on the Elite Series? Is there like crazy accounting? I don't quite get why this is happening. To me, what it signals is that if tournament directors do not have to raise $40,000, $50,000 of added cash, they're not going to do it.
Yeah.
Because it must be a pain.
Oh, I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is. Well, here's the other thing that I'll add. I cannot see Beaver State Fling tickets. So if someone wants to write in and let me know, I would love to hear about it because I don't know the cost. But I'm looking right now at the Cascade Challenge. The cost of tickets, just as a metric for silver events, $15 for Friday general admission, $20 for Saturday and Sunday. I have to imagine that's pretty close to, and then VIP tickets are between, you know, $40 a day is the most, and that was Saturday, Sunday, and those are sold out.
How much is Portland open?
Let's pull it.
I mean, I definitely think you're making a case here that I'm sure you're going to make, which is that it's more expensive to spectate at an Elite Series. It's probably true.
I think that's part of it. And so we've got Portland open up here, and when we pull up Portland open.
Now, it's worth noting, Portland Open is an Elite Plus event.
Correct. You know, actually, interesting, the general admission is $20 on Saturday, $25 on Sunday, so pretty comparable.
Okay.
The VIPs are $60 for Saturday, or for Sunday, $47 for Saturday. So actually, it's pretty in
not
line.
Terribly different.
Yeah. Not terribly different. So okay. I'm curious to know, because like you said, it looked like there were a good number of spectators, but how many were there in reality? Because I don't think it takes that many spectators to have an angle on camera make it look like there's a lot of people, right?
Sure.
Because even if there's, let's say there's 200, 250 spectators, I think that can fill a fairway pretty easily. And even if you go, I mean, compare that with, so let's say OTB at, you know, $20 a ticket, we'll say, and that's not including VIP or, you know, all the different, but $20 a ticket for OTB, they estimated they were going to have about 1500 people. That's an extra $30,000 in money that they were able to bring in. Not all that's of which point. Is profit, but if you turn that number into 300 to 500, I mean, even 500 people, that becomes $10,000. Right. And so that $10,000 now. And remember, $5 per ticket had to go to the state park as well, just to get in. I wonder if there are costs associated with using the park, besides just the entry, you know, the day fee, the day use fee that spectators were paying. So all in all, my point is that I think that there are, every tournament is going to come with basic infrastructure demands, whether it is a silver or an elite series. Access to the property, bringing in some facilities for at least, you know, once you hit a threshold of probably 200 to 500 spectators, you're going to have. So you compare both of those things, and the ticket sales are a little bit less in terms of cost, not much, but some, and you have probably half to a third as many people who are attending. And then the demand to get sponsors is much less as well. So you focus on the tournament instead, because, you know, think about OTB. Sean said that they'd been living in Stockton on the weekends for 6 weeks, right? Like, if you don't have to do that because you don't have to worry about fundraising, I can't blame people for not wanting to. So I guess it feels like it's a lot of little things that add up to 10,000, 5,000 here, 10,000, 5,000 here that, you know, kind of pull away and bring us to the 40 to 50,000 mark for silver.
Sure. Events. Sure. Well, Ella Hansen responded to Drew Gibson over on Twitter and dropped some Maple Hill factual fact stats and pointed out that first place in MPO has gone from $3,000 in 2012 to $12,500 in 2022. And Ella said, if you really want to get into payouts year to year, that's one thing. Cherry picking your stats to make it look like we're getting paid less, ain't it though, Drew? And, you know, there was like some back and forth. And here's a simple fact. The average payout on tour now has gone up dramatically. You know that if you listen to this program. I mean, we literally track every payout every year, and it's enormously different. Now, I don't know what Drew is like getting salty about this particular tournament for. I guess I get the point, but this is not out of line with the other silver events. I do think it's interesting that there's this distinction, and I do think we're headed towards a world where things are going to kind of become more of like a single unified tour without this silver distinction, which is starting to feel less and less relevant.
Yeah. I want to add one more interesting note as well, real fast.
Okay.
In 2019, Eagle won and earned $5,000.
This was like its final year as an NT because
correct.
Then it got canceled for COVID, and then it was like canceled again for COVID.
I think it was a fire.
Like trees fell down. There was the fire.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah.
Anyway, So it was at $5,000 for the payout in 2019. And then the tour goes off, or it leaves the tour completely, not even just like silver events, but we're talking like gone. Did not happen for 2 years. And then last year, the purse was $34,000, and now it's back up to $43,000. The one thing that tournament directors have told us, because we've talked to tournament directors, and we've asked, like, what if you were a tournament that worked on alternating year with another tournament on tour? And they said that fundraising efforts are significantly easier when you're going year after year after year, because you're able to get the same repeating sponsors coming back. And so, I mean, that payout, $5,000, that would have been the best MPO payout and tied for the best FPO. FPO still did really well relative to other silver events, but it would have been the best MPO payout on tour this year on silver events had it been at that $5,000 mark.
And let us not forget, what has changed in that time is that the Portland Open now exists.
Right, right.
Which is soaking up sponsorship money in the area.
Yep.
Spectating in the area. And the Pro Tour runs that tournament. And you know, the Beaver State Fling was like dealing with kind of like a crisis of itself. You know, it was like dealing with, you know, it's hard. It's hard to run a tournament year after year.
Yes.
And I hope we can preserve it on the tour. I don't think this is, I don't think the money situation is meaningful about the Beaver State Fling as much as it is that, you know, it's hard to raise this money. And I do think it's interesting to see the distinction, because the fact that silver events never seem to be popping off with big payouts suggests to me that it's hard to get that money raised unless you're sort of like forced to do it. And the Pro Tour is chipping in some of that money, which that definitely happens.
Yeah. Pretty interesting. The other thing that I'll add, though, I think you touched on it. You said, you know, that's not what's important about the Beaver State Fling. It's not why people come play the Beaver State Fling. It's a silver event, Drew. Don't come. Like, no one told you had to come. There weren't that many points on the line. If you really felt like that $3,000 was such a waste of your time, like, you did not need to come play this event.
A factual fact stat that I have for you is that Drew didn't, in fact, win this tournament, Josh. How much money did Drew win?
I don't know.
Let's look it up.
Let's see. Drew, $786.
Still got your money back.
And then some. Like, yeah. That paid for your tour card, I think. Isn't the tour card around that amount?
Yeah,
or was it like previous years? Yeah.
I don't know exactly what it was this year, but. Yeah. All right. Time to review hole 18. Now, we talked about it in our endless morass of an episode on Thursday, but we are going to take a look at it again now. Well, before we get to 18, I just quickly, unofficial hole 17 review, because that was the hole that everybody was going to be talking about, and I think it was pretty interesting. We even set up an over-under on it, and then they changed the par to like the day before the tournament.
Cheaters.
It was going to be a par 4, and they were like, actually, wait a minute, that's crazy, and they made it a par 5. Had it been a par 4, there would have been zero birdies. Zero. Yep. So they made it a par 5. Josh, we've nullified the over-under. But what did you think of the way 17 played?
For MPO, I loved 17. It was fun to watch. The scoring spread was great. I know there are spectator limitations, but I wish that hole 17 had been hole 18. The MPO side was perfect. It's one of my favorite holes on tour. As a par 5 on the MPO side, it was too hard on the FPO side. They needed to either pull the basket up, you know, do something, because on round 3 for FPO, it played 1.55 strokes over par, and there was a total of, and this is a par 5 as well for the FPO side. Jessica Weiss was the only one to birdie it. There were then about 10 pars, and the rest were bogeys, doubles, or triple bogeys. So
I mean, basically, it was a par 6.
Yes, yes. Would have been a pretty good par 6, to be honest, if we had those.
Is it legit to make a par 6? Remember, the Northwood Black Hole is kind of a par 6.
Man, it's the best hole in disc golf. I love that.
I can't
that.
Bring up Ledgestone to Josh at all.
I love that hole, though.
There's a moratorium anyway. On talking about Ledgestone until August. Yeah, no, whatever. All the people are going to start typing, par is just a number.
Right.
Yeah, but, you know, still matters. All right. So hole 18 review. Unfortunately, just isn't it.
No.
This is not it. I think the whole course suffered a little bit from some of the layout issues because obviously, you know, they sort of mix and matched holes. Uh-huh. There were brutal backups at times this weekend because of the like weird walks and fairway, whatever. And so that wasn't great. And just hole 18 was just boring. I mean, it doesn't bring you what you want from a hole 18. And so I give it a 4 in MPO and a 5 in FPO. I give it a little bit higher in FPO because their scoring separation was a little more interesting. But I mean, it was kind of if you play it good, you get a birdie, and if you don't play it good, you get a par.
Yep.
And I don't know. That's not an exciting way to close out the round. It's not even a bad hole. It's just not appropriate for a hole 18.
On the MPO side, if you watched round two, I think was the perfect explanation about why it was so bad. Garrett Gerthy throws an amazing drive. I mean, he goes for the gap, makes it basically pin high, but is still, 150 feet or so out. So there's no real meaningful attempt at an eagle. So there's no reward for going big like that. I mean, his upshot was easier. But then Nico plays the Stockheiser, throws a backhand, parked. Aaron Gossage plays the Stockheiser, is a little pinched off, and then throws a forehand, parked, or with well within circle one. Anthony Barilla is literally in the tree, and so he catches a limb on his turnover and ends up taking a par because of it. But there's no danger. There's no – when eagle goes into that hole up by – multiple strokes, you just know it's over. Like, there's no way that you can screw that hole up that bad to even take a bogey, really. And then on the FPO side, it was the same thing, right? Like, it was within one stroke, so it was interesting-ish, but it was so routine for Jen Allen that, yeah, it
just not a lot of pressure. It's not an exciting finishing hole in any way that you want to slice it. So, right.
So I don't know if I said this, but I gave it a 4 on both sides.
All right. So it ends up with a 4 average. That's the lowest since Music City Open. Same is true on the FPO side. And, you know, that hole suffered from a slightly different problem, which is that it was just like unbirdiable, basically. Yeah. Or just like it was really hard to do worse than par. I mean, in some ways it was the same thing. It was just a longer hole, but it was just like there's a little too much space and a little lack of drama. So yep. I think they can fix it easily for next year.
Oh yeah.
So we have another silver event coming up this weekend. Very unusual to have. We have like back-to-back-to-back-to-back tournaments with, you know, elite, silver, silver, elite. So kind of odd to have that. We're going up to Washington before we come back to Portland. And so we will break all that down for you on Thursday's show. That is going to do it for today. Thank you so much for tuning in. For Josh Mansfield, I'm Charlie Eisenhood saying so long, and we'll talk to you Thursday right here on The Upshot.